This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Keeping Up with the Kafashians, the place where the threads of medical expertise weave into the fabric of family life. I'm Afif, a neonatologist deeply intrigued by the earliest stages of life and how our beginnings shape us.
And I'm Anne, an obstetric anesthesiologist with a heart firmly rooted in maternal health and well-being. My passion lies in ensuring safety and comfort during one of life's most remarkable journeys, childbirth.
Together, we navigate the intricate journey of professional practice and personal experience, especially as it pertains to parenting, health, and the profound experience of raising children.
Each episode, we invite you into conversations that bridge the gap between science and the living room, sharing insights from our fields, stories from our lives, and discussions that connect with everyone, from healthcare professionals to parents and those interested in the marvels of human development.
We're here to explore, to question, and to celebrate the incredible journey of life, from the first heartbeat to the first steps and beyond. Welcome to Keeping Up with the Kafashians.
Let's begin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Keeping Up with the Kafashians, episode 8, and we are halfway through the season.
Is it a 16-episode season? I've no idea. I just kind of... I come down the garden, I chat to Afif for a while, and we might have read some stuff if it's relevant to various different topics, but like from an educational bit, but the rest of it, then I just potter on in my merry way. I have no idea what's going on in the world.
Well, this episode is going to be positively pushing P, no cap.
I just like to say I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry to all of the listeners out there who are being subjected to Afif's Gen Z chat.
I think I'm giving out total main character vibes and you're just being an NPC.
Oh my God. This has been going on for ages. It's like it's a few days now and I actually don't know how you've learned so many of these words. I vaguely understand them, but A, why do you want to learn them? B, like, can you stop using them when you're talking to me, please?
Well, I can't understand my 16-year-old daughter anymore. So I figured, why not just learn the language?
I just speak to her normally.
Yeah.
Like most parents do.
She doesn't speak to me like that.
Yeah, she's only one, didn't you?
She comes up to me and she goes, uses words like bussin and drip and slaps. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
She's only winding you up because she knows you're so gullible. She can suck you into her little Gen Z world and you will learn all the vocabulary.
Sure, the other
day. Like, if you're 46, love, you're nearly 47.
I know I'm two generations or three generations behind. But I'm sorry, her friend the other day was like, yo, Afif. First of all, she said, yo, Afif, right?
Yeah, it's fine.
And then she was like, yo, Afif, your drips are slaps. And I'm like, I'm sorry, where am I dripping? And I started looking around. So my drips were slaps. Do you know what that means?
No, your clothes or something.
Yeah, my drips are my clothes and slaps is a good thing, supposedly. So she liked what I was wearing.
It could totally not be if you've... Like, just don't interact with them. Leave them in their own Gen Z world. That's where they want to be.
But I think they are using this coded language so that they could say whatever they want about
yeah.
us. But I decided...
That's what they all do.
I decided to just tackle it and learn it.
It's embarrassing. It's actually worse than just embarrassing. It's irritating.
Well, I think I just understood the assignment. Anyway, moving on. You didn't shut up. You didn't.
Sorry, I just got what you meant by it. I just understood the assignment. I'm like, can somebody out there just please feel a little bit sorry because for me, because like, I know it sounds like he's doing this for the pod, but he's actually doing this at home. All the time, he's texting me this random language that has nothing to do with our world. And I just, it's a little bit pathetic.
Can I just say?
It's a little bit sad, Afif. And it's really annoying.
Can I just say before we move on?
Oh no, is this going to be another thing?
You're really CEO'd the cleaning today.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so thank you. And you know what? Anne did a marvelous job cleaning the entire house today because...
And do you know what's not left around the place? Lots of cleaning products. And you know how you know I did the cleaning? Because it's clean.
The house did look immaculate.
Oh yeah, garden done, everything.
Yeah, absolutely. It did look immaculate. Because, why? What are you attributing this burst of energy to?
I'm extra cold, cold plunge. I don't want to be one of these like sea swimmer cold people, cold plunge people who just goes on and on and on about it. So I but wasn't going to bring it up.
You go on and on and on and on about how amazing the cold plunge is.
I don't go on and on and on about it. I don't even bother talking to you about it anymore.
Because I just don't know how anybody in their sane mind jumps into a pool of 2 degree water. And you last how long now?
Well, I got out after 5 minutes. I could have stayed longer. But I used to do longer, but I think I was doing it wrong.
Yeah, and like your skin is cold for like the rest of the day.
I know, it's lovely.
She said, I know, it's lovely.
Did you, sorry, did that not come across?
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, plunge pooling, apparently it boosts your immune system or something. I don't know what it does.
And but a big dopamine boost in your brain. So I just came home and all of a sudden, everything just like, pa-choing, pa-choing, pa-choing. I was like zipping around the house, getting lots of stuff done. It was amazing.
Yeah, you understood the assignment.
Oh, please stop, please. The only way I can put this, let me explain it in terms you'll understand. I find it irritating, yes, but I know you like irritating me sometimes. But I find it unattractive, Afif. Does that change things at all?
Nope.
Oh, shit.
Damn it. What I'm hearing is that you're finding it a bit choogy. And not. Oh,
please stop. Please. Please.
And not dank.
Okay, so what is the educational topic that we're going to discuss today?
Let's move on. Let's move on. Oh, so on the main podcast, we spoke about the outcomes of individuals that were born prematurely that are now in their adolescence and early adulthood. Mm-hmm. And we had an amazing guest on called Dr. Kara Goss from Texas, who actually dual trained in pediatrics and in adult respiratory medicine. And she was able to combine those two, and she has dedicated her research career to measuring the lung function and heart function in individuals that were born premature that are now adults, which is really fascinating because it is something that you as an adult physician don't usually think about. Sure, you don't. And you don't ask people whether they were born prematurely.
Nope.
And it's something that I think, and what Dr. Kara Goss was saying, the adult physician should start thinking about it. And the first thing she said is, well, when I ask my adult colleagues to start asking those questions, their first response is, well, what do I do when they tell me that they were born premature? And her response to that is, well, until we start finding out more data by asking the questions, we'll never actually learn what to do. So what she found and what she's demonstrating is that the hearts of adults that were born prematurely are smaller than the hearts of adults that were born at term, and their tolerance to exercise is not as good. Most of them do have a healthy adult life, but what she argues is that most of them aren't actually challenged to the extreme of exercise and exertion on a regular basis. So we don't know how people that are born prematurely can react to, you know, being stressed in terms of exercise tolerance and things like that. The other interesting thing is they have persistent pulmonary hypertension, which means that the blood vessels in their lungs do not actually relax as quickly and as readily as individuals that are born term. We've had this discussion a few times, me and you, about, you know, what should you do as an adult anaesthetist? You should actually start knowing these things because, you know, you probably want to know this information if you are putting somebody to sleep or if they're undergoing a significant surgery. At least it should be a risk factor that you're thinking about because 10% of the population are born preterm. So 1 in 10 of your patients that's coming through will potentially have those issues.
It's really interesting that you're coming out with all this stuff because I was doing a little bit of reading, you know, me and the reading.
Yeah.
If you look at the evolution of the heart within the fetus, I suppose the development of the heart within the fetus from about 3 weeks gestation. So right when you think that pregnancy test is positive or your period is late, you know, at that point in time, the oxygen that the baby was just getting through diffusion is not sufficient anymore. So the cardiovascular system is really urgently developed around that stage. Like there's urgency for it to develop around that stage. And the first heartbeat happens around day 22 of life. In the womb, and there's an active cardiovascular circulation by the end of the 4th week gestation. It's so early that cardiovascular system develops, once that heart starts beating, when you think about it, that tiny, tiny, little, teeny, teeny, tiny heart is the same heart that beats the whole way through for the rest of your life. And I just think it's amazing. What I found was really interesting when you were talking about pulmonary hypertension, you know, like that high pulmonary vascular resistance that's maintained in utero, okay, is there to shunt blood away from the lungs because the baby's not using the lungs inside. Everything is coming through the placenta, which is essentially it functions as its lungs. It's an endocrine organ. It's, you know, it's got so many different functions. And if the blood is actively shunted away from the lungs, and in the beginning, only about 10% of the blood coming out of the heart goes through the lungs. And then around 30 weeks gestation, about 25%. So it starts to increase as the lungs are developing. But it's still only 25% of what comes out through the heart. So if you think about it now, now as an independent life form, everything that comes out the right side of the heart goes through the lungs pretty much and goes down. So only 25%. And then prior to delivery, after delivery, then there's a big switch where the high oxygen environment after the first breath makes the lungs really, really sensitive to nitric oxide, which is a really profound dilator of the blood vessels in the lungs, right? And that's all in normal term babies. So you obviously, as a neonatologist, know a lot more about that stuff. But one thing I found interesting when you were saying near term, there's actually a further decrease in pulmonary vascular resistance in utero. And that is down to a switch in prostaglandins. And prostaglandins are some of these inflammatory kind of messenger molecules, as well as little molecules that have a multitude of functions in the body, and the same chemical can have a multitude of different effects. But in the lungs, it switches from prostaglandins that tell everything, the blood vessels, to stay tight so that they don't actually transmit blood. And it switches over near term to ones that start to tell them to relax a little bit. So there's actually vasodilatory prostaglandin switch near term. And I'm just wondering, do the babies who are born early don't benefit from that recruitment within the lungs? And is that part of the reason? And then interesting that you say that babies have small, that adults who were premature have smaller hearts, because before delivery, before term actually, the cardiomyocytes, which is the muscle cells of the heart, are programmed to proliferate. So they're programmed to grow in number. So there's more and more of them. And then after delivery, they're programmed to increase in size. So is it that they don't get that growth phase if they come out early because everything has to switch to postnatal mode so quickly? So they don't get the increase in blood flow to the lungs at the end of term. They don't get the drop, like the increase in blood vessel size in the lungs close to term. They don't get the added increase in heart cell numbers close to term. And then everything switches. So it hasn't had that time to develop. Do you think that's what it is?
So it's interesting what you said, because the number of heart cells in the fetus only increase in number rapidly in the third trimester. So there's a phase of rapid, what we call is hyperplasia. So hyper is a lot or fast. Plasia is increase in number.
Yeah.
So that happens in the third trimester. So if you're born before the completion of the third trimester, you then arrest that phase, meaning that you stop making more heart cells. And then after delivery, what happens is the heart switches from making more cells to making the cells that it has bigger. So it goes from hyperplasia to hypertrophy. So the cells that you have at the time of delivery begin to grow larger if you're born preterm, rather than continue to divide. And that can cause a lot of issues, actually. It's not a generally good thing if it continues to happen, because if you have really thick muscle walls, then your heart becomes stiff. It doesn't pump as well and it doesn't relax as well. And we found in a lot of studies that we did in preterm babies, actually, that they have much stiffer hearts than babies that are born term, meaning that they don't relax as well. And also they don't pump as strongly. And we also found, and we were actually the first people, my research group were the first people to discover and to report this. When we are born as term, our hearts are actually quite compliant, meaning that they can relax really easily and really, really well. And as we grow older, our hearts begin to stiffen. So as we get into our 50s, 60s, 70s, the ability of the heart to relax diminishes.
And I would see that in adults.
Yeah.
There's a thing where you can get essentially heart failure, even though your pump function is just fine. And what it is it's your heart's inability to relax, to allow the blood to fill it, and then it pumps. So, and that's quite common. That's actually more and more common as it's been, as we're getting better at recognizing it. And it would often happen in kind of late, so middle age onwards.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
The other thing an adult heart does as it stiffens is it begins to twist more to compensate for that stiffness. So as the heart pumps, it actually twists upon itself, almost like a wringing motion.
Yeah, it's like wringing out your kitchen cloth.
Yes, and then as it relaxes, it untwists, so almost creates a suction to actually allow blood to come in. Now that twist thing that I've just described in adults only kicks in properly by the time you're 50 or 60 years old, because your heart stiffens, right? What we are finding in preterm babies is that mechanism is fully happening by the time they are leaving the hospital. So the heart of a preterm baby at term is twisting like the heart of a 70-year-old to try and compensate for that stiffness, which is fascinating. So the heart is finding actually ways to overcome the inherent stiffness that it has by activating this twist thing that normally only kicks in when somebody is in their 60s or 70s.
That's really interesting. I think, though, it's important to say as well, though, that, you know, these babies who are now adults who were preterm are very well functioning adults and are doing just fine. But I think the interesting part will be, and the need for study comes around, because we need to know the best way to help them to stay strong, functioning, healthy adults, the same as we would with everybody.
So I asked this question to Dr. Goss, and she said exactly what you said, is that the majority of adults born prematurely that she sees are healthy and they are functioning well within society. They're even swimming, playing sports and doing all of that. And they are able to tolerate, you know, moderate sport activity with no problem. But she's seeing a higher proportion of those individuals that run into trouble in terms of exercise tolerance down the line.
Interesting.
And then what she said was, it becomes a lot more crucial for these individuals to try and control the modifiable risk factors.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So keeping a healthy weight.
Yeah.
Eating healthy diet. She said avoiding smoking, avoiding drinking, and eating well and exercising. So individuals should not be worried about their hearts in avoiding exercise. She really emphasized that exercise is actually a good way of offsetting those changes and almost promoting the heart. And the other thing we've discovered in our group as well is exposure to breast milk, mother's own breast milk, during your preterm time in the hospital can actually change your heart structure from the premature type to the healthy term type. And by a year of age, if you're exposed to breast milk during your early newborn period, a one-year-old preterm baby's heart that is exposed to breast milk functions almost as well as a healthy term baby's heart.
Wow.
So breast milk can actually help reverse those changes.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of those, it's just magic stuff. And I think, you know, it's designed for humans, made by humans, in a way that we just can't replicate.
But in our unit anyway, if a mother cannot provide breast milk for her preterm baby, we give human donor milk. Great. So all our babies that are below a certain age get human donor milk instead of formula.
Because it's that important.
And our study has demonstrated that human donor milk does have those beneficial changes on the heart. Not as much as mother's own milk, because it's a lot more specific to the baby, but better than formula in terms of heart function. So yeah, so rest assured that, you know, we do have those interventions. And, you know, part of why we now do donor milk is because we know that these things improve your baby's outcome by a year of age and beyond as well.
That's amazing.
So even if you're not able to breastfeed for whatever reason, your baby will get donor breast milk.
That's amazing.
In our hospital.
So anyway. It is literally like medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And what is the difference, do you think?
It's the active. So I've looked into this. So, well, fresh breast milk has stem cells. We don't know what they do. So there's billions of stem cells that are in breast milk that, and stem cells, for people that don't know, what we call
your blank canvas cell.
Yeah, your blank canvas cell. That's a lovely way of putting it, that can differentiate into any other type of cell. So they could potentially go into all the different organs and fix them. There's a lot of growth factors in the breast milk that promote positive growth of organs. There's monosaccharides, human monosaccharides, that feed the gut microbiome to develop healthy bacteria. And we've spoken about the benefit of that on all organs down the line. It has lots of important immunoglobulins and other things like that. Now, the thing with donor milk is, because it is gathered from multiple donors, it is also pasteurized to get rid of bacteria. Yeah. But that pasteurization gets rid of stem cells, gets rid of all the bioactive or the live things in the breast milk.
Living in it, so.
Yeah, it preserves a lot of the other bits.
The micronutrients.
Yes, but not the live. And that's why mother's own milk is still better than the baby, for the baby.
The more I learn about breast milk, the more it blows my mind.
Yeah.
So, and the fact that half the population have potentially the capacity to create that kind of food for an infant is unbelievable.
Yeah. And the other thing,
it's just done unconsciously. Like, it's unbelievable.
And the other thing that's done unconsciously, which I think is amazing, is preterm babies need more protein and more fat and less carbohydrates than a term baby does. And if a mother delivers a baby prematurely and breastfeeds her preterm baby, her breast milk makes more protein and more fat and less carbohydrate. If you compare the breast milk of a mother of a preterm baby to the breast milk of a mother of a term baby, the preterm baby's breast milk has more protein and has more fat to suit the baby's need. How the body knows that, I have no idea, but it's another part of the magic.
It is absolutely magic stuff. I knew that your breast milk evolves with the age of your child. I knew all of that. I know that, like, the melatonin content is different in a 24-hour cycle. So, you know, if you're pumping, try not to. Some people say don't give your baby the breast milk from the morning, because your evening breast milk will have more melatonin in it and it'll actually help put your child to sleep. Those kind of things. And I just thought, that's crazy. That's just so amazing. But this stuff really blows my mind.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible. So we hope that you found our chat helpful.
I'm a little bit conflicted, I have to say.
Why?
Because it's been so nice hearing you speak without all of the absolute bullshit Gen Z terminology you've been coming out with, that I kind of feel like I want to keep talking to you on the pod.
Right.
But it's been also nice seeing that, like, even though my daughter sounds like you do when you're talking Gen Z BS, maybe she might be able to talk sense like you do when you switch into smart person mode.
So what I'm hearing is that I've CEO'd this conversation.
Oh, Jesus.
And that I've understood the assignment.
See, people are going to think that you're going to stop this once the pod goes off and then you go back to being like a boring person. No, he keeps going because it winds me up so much and I can't. I don't know what to do.
All right. I'm going to finna yeet out of here.
Oh, my God.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.